Welcome to Because Marie Said So. I'm Marie Adornato, your host, and just wanted to share with you some amazing information that we have regarding entrepreneurship. If we're not talking entrepreneurship, we are not talking. Today, we have a very special guest. This guest is someone who is top in the bridal industry. And if you don't know her work, you will know it by the end of this interview. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Miss Wendy Rivera?
Yes. Hi. I'm so excited to be here with you today and chatting through all things bridal. I love your passion for it. So I'm just honored to be a part of this. We could start with how we got into bridal, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. How'd you get into the bridal industry? Like this is one crazy industry.
Yes, 100% it is. And I feel like it's always an interesting question to start off with, right? Because very few people really like set out to be in bridal, I feel like.
I was in the same position. Yes.
Yeah. You think you're going to do one thing with your life and then it turns and you end up in bridal for one reason or another. And it's really interesting to hear those background stories. So for me, I did not know, of course, that I would end up in bridal. When I was getting my master's degree in music, I needed a job to help pay for school in my final semester. And so there was a boutique down the street from the school I was going to. And I thought, oh, that might be fun. I'll try to apply there. And so I applied there. And I still remember I was paid like $7.25 an hour. And then we got like $20 for any bridal dress that we sold over $2,000 and $15 for a bridal dress under $2,000 and then prom dresses and moms and whatever. So I was a part-time consultant at this very kind of legendary boutique. It was a very large boutique and been in the industry for like 63 years. And so I jumped right in. I love people. I love connecting with people. I love helping people to express themselves. And my background in fine arts communications really played into that as well. Also, I grew up using drama and music to help teens. And so when you're working with teens, you have to be able to connect with them quickly and help them to communicate truth from the stage was what we were doing my whole life up until this point. So so connecting with people quickly was a joy to me, and helping them feel beautiful was just so much fun. I felt like I was just costuming everybody and I just had a blast. So I could also very much multitask. So at this particular boutique, I could help a bride over here and prom girls over here. And like, I was going and going, and we didn't get any training because we didn't have time. I went into, they first said I was going to shadow their most experienced stylist. And I went in the first day, and she said, you stand there in the corner and you don't say anything. And I was like, yes, ma'am. And she'd been in the industry for like 100 years, you know? And so everybody had gotten their dress from her. And so I stood there in the corner, the bride comes in. And as soon as the bride came in, the owner peeked her head in right behind the bride. And she was like, Wendy, come here. She said, there's a bride out here and I want you to take her and act like you've been doing this all your life. Perfect. And so that was my training. So I just jumped in and figured it out as I went and learned very quickly what it felt like to be the doormat because I was a people pleaser and I felt like I could serve and love someone to death. And then that would be the way to go. And I learned that actually that's not the most helpful thing is to be the doormat. That's not the helpful thing. And I after a 3.5 hour appointment with one bride, where I was treated like dirt under her feet. And I just kept thinking, I'm going to love her to death. And, I learned you start crystallizing what it actually means to love someone in this particular process. You start learning behaviors because it's a little bit like Groundhog Day. Brides tend to do similar behaviors. And so you get to do it again and learn from it and then do it again and learn from it. And so I was learning very quickly what fears brides had and why they behaved the way that they did. And because I did love them and wanted to serve them, I was coming up with solutions for it rather than getting bitter at them. But it was a short period of time. I only did this from January to May. And then I graduated and thought that would be all that I would do in bridal. But during that time, I was the only part-time consultant at this boutique. But then I outsold all of the full-time consultants. So there was this thing where I was like, boy, I'm so glad I loved what I needed to do to get money for school. That's what I thought. I was so glad that was fun to do. Had a great relationship with that store. The fast forward, that next summer, I met my husband. We got married 2.5 years later. And we thought we would be doing drama and music in this ministry and communications for the rest of our lives. That's what we thought we'd be doing. That's what we met doing. But God definitely changed that path. And in that, looking for what we would do, I knew I had done bridal before. So I was like, well, I'll do part-time bridal again. So I was a part-time consultant again in a different state. And that was also a short period of time. It's about 8 months. And then we moved. And one other time we moved again, because we've moved like 11 times since we've been married, the way that our path has gone. And so then I got a job at another bridal boutique for about 3 months. And each one of the boutiques, I would be the top person, even though I was part-time. So in the third one, they started asking me to stay behind after work and help the other stylists. Like, it was the other stylists asking me to do it. They were like, what are you doing? How are you doing what you're doing? So I started trying to formulate it to be able to help others, because I was starting to come in to help close all of their sales. So, and then we, you know, moved again, and there was a space that we saw in Fredericksburg, and I was like, oh my goodness, that needs to be a bridal boutique. Someone needs to make that a bridal boutique. So by this time, it's a hobby, right? Like, you stand in the grocery store and you see the bridal magazines. You're like, I know that designer. And I'm not in person, but I know their dresses. And still, I didn't think it was something we would be doing long-term. I was, Gabe and I were wanting to be in counseling. Like, we love the idea of having a counseling center. So anyway, and my best friend was getting married, and I came up with the dream scenario for what I thought would be the most incredible experience for her bridal shower. And I helped her when she went to find her dress. I just jumped in and was the stylist for that. And so all these things were happening at the same time. I saw this place. I called my former boss and said, there's a space up here. It's what used to be the stage of an old theater. That'd be the perfect place for a bridal shop. You know, you need to come up here and do another shop. And she wasn't interested. And long story short, my sister and her husband I needed a job to help, you know, we needed two incomes. And so I needed a job where I could also kind of be with my kids more. And my sister said, why don't you call up boutiques and help them train their people? And I was like, you don't call up a boutique and say, hey, I was a part-time consultant. Let me help your people. You just don't do that. And she was like, well, do you think it's teachable? And I said, yeah, I do think what I did, I can break it down and help someone else with it. And so I started telling her what I do. She started writing it down. And I guess after that conversation, she then decided she needs her own boutique to prove these concepts out. And so they had, I'm just going to be honest with you, they had $10,000 that they were going to go to auction for this farm, because her husband was a farmer, and they lost that auction with that $10,000. So they said, well, we have $10,000. Let's start a bridal boutique. Little did we know, $10,000 is not enough to start a bridal boutique in any world. But we didn't know that. And so we got the space and we went to market and came back, and we found a way to end up opening with 22 dresses and two veils, one veil that my friend made and another veil that we got at market. And I knew what I needed as a stylist. I knew the styles that I pulled. I knew what I didn't need in the shop, the things that we never touched as stylists, which was super helpful going to market. And then we did the whole decor in the boutique on a shoestring. Like, we did it without spending pretty much any money. I got chairs for free after a garage sale, and recovered them with a curtain from Target. And I knew how to use my theater background to set a stage that gives a feeling and a good setting for something without spending a lot of money.
That's so wonderful. I have a lot of respect for you, because you are incredible at really using resources and really understanding that this business is about psychology. This is really your customer behavior and understanding, you know, getting into their brain to find out,
yes,
you know, what exactly are they thinking? What are their needs? Many brides don't even understand what they need. They don't even understand what they want.
100%.
They're looking 100%. For your guidance. And so I'm
it's so multifaceted too. And you know, here these brides are, they're coming in. This is the most important day of their life. Every pressure in the world is on this day. You know, I mean, you think about how it feels to have family over for Thanksgiving and family that maybe are not comfortable to be around. Mm-hmm. Certain people aren't good around other people and they have different political views, maybe different religious views, whatever it is. And there can be angst with just having family for Thanksgiving. Imagine bringing both families into right one day. And it's supposed to be the happiest day in the world. And having those people also need to be at the event where you're choosing the dress that is going to be your forever dress. Some people you have to have there. And even though you wouldn't choose to have them there, you have to have them there. So you're coming in with fears of how you're going to look in dresses, if you're going to fit into dresses, are you going to find something you like? And then the fears of everybody's opinions, and then the fear of the salesperson themselves. And there's just so much pressure that is easy to forget that a bride is in. And when you're in pressure and you have fear going on in your mind, you behave way differently mm-hmm. than a normal person. So you're so right that it's so much about emotional intelligence and relational sensitivity and realizing that she needs to be freed to express her own thoughts and feelings. It's so necessary. So if we're just thinking that she can give us, this is what I want, this is the kind of fabric I want, this is the kind of cut I want, and this is the price point that I actually want to stay within, and give it to us exactly, like all of these documents that sometimes boutiques will have them fill out, like what kind of train do you want? What kind of neckline do you want? What kind of cut of dress do you want? You know, blah, blah, blah. Even their budget, and getting that too much ahead of time is a waste of time. And it becomes very discouraging for stylists and very frustrating for brides. You're asking them to answer things that they can't actually answer ahead of time.
And I think those questions many times become more transactional rather than creating this elevated experience, which you really are the expert on. Tell me a little bit about, you have two locations, and I'll tell you, I have seen so much on your social media of these amazing events that you have. And I literally have FOMO that I'm not there because, you know, I can feel through, you know, the device that I'm on. I can feel the emotion. I can feel the joy. I can feel the freedom and how everyone there is just special. It's just a special experience and meaningful. Tell me about your stores. And I literally watch you and I'm like, this is just such an amazing experience. Like I could never recreate it.
Oh my goodness. Thank you. Well, I am so glad you feel all of those things through the social media. That is so our goal. So you've just made my whole team's day that you said you felt those things. That's what we're trying to do is communicate that. One, Marie, we believe that love should be, we should fan the flame of love in someone's life as long as we can, as big as we can, as far as we can. So we're trying to show brides, you should be celebrated and you should enjoy not only just this time period, but remember these feelings for the rest of your life. So they're a part of our parties for the rest of their life. Some parties are even open to the public. Other parties are just private to our brides. But regardless, our brides get invited to these parties for the rest of their life, for sure. With this concept, it's this, we're always trying to think outside of the box of ways that we can create what we think would be a fun party and different themes and ways to make them over the top. Because where do you get to go to over the top parties? I mean, I see some of these things on Instagram of like Versailles and stuff, like they'll do these big costume parties and or these Bridgerton parties or whatever. They're super fun themed parties. So we want to create unique ones like that for our brides. And we have an incredible creative team. Our chief branding officer is actually my baby sister. And she is a genius when it comes to brainstorming parties and networking with other professionals to make some magic that no one has ever dreamed of before. And she just sees this vision and gets everybody mobilized with it as well. So we have a great team that works on this. But yeah, the parties themselves, it's incredible to watch how it creates something beyond the dress. And that's one of our goals. You know, in the industry, bridal shops can get frustrated with brides price shopping and going to so many shops. And those are definite frustrations. But what would be the answer to that? The answer, because they go to so many shops because of FOMO, right? Mm-hmm. Like they don't want to miss out. They want to try on everything they're supposed to try on and have all this experience and not have it go quick. They want to stretch out this moment of finding their dress as long as they can, because when it's over, they feel like, that's sad, it's over, even though they're glad they found their dress. So our concept was, let's put a different finish line. Like, let's not have the dress be the finish line. Let's have the dress be the starting point. So it's like the dress, finding your dress becomes your ticket to be a part of this club. Mm-hmm. And you get to then be at these parties for the rest of your life. And that's different than, okay, I found my dress and it's done. Do you see what I mean? So that does create a different kind of FOMO, to where they're hoping that they find their dress with us. That was the goal. I was so excited, Gabe and I both, when we first opened. And I'll tell you, this party concept started when we were first open because it's because of all that I just described to you, and because we had no money for marketing. We had nothing. We literally had nothing for marketing. And so we couldn't even pay to be on the knot. We couldn't pay for anything. So we found that we beat the pavement and networked with the businesses in our community, and we created these parties. We had a production background. So our fashion shows and our, you know, parties that we created and outside the box things and set design on without spending money, that's our expertise. So leaning into that got us quickly. We didn't know that it was the strongest way forward. We thought it would be, but we had never done this before. So it was doing it and then thinking, okay, this is the right activity. Hope these numbers follow. But turns out it really was the strongest way to go for us anyway. And it increased our social media. It increased our community involvement. It increased our impact with different charities and philanthropy. It increased our network of whose lives we were into. And it made people conscious of us who were not even looking for gowns. Mm-hmm. And that's key when you're building a brand. You want to build a brand that stands for something meaningful, so that you have important things to share with people and get people excited about and have it make an impact in their life. So they want to take on that identity. And then you want to be into the community in such a way that the first time they hear about you is not when they get a ring on your finger, but that they grow up knowing about you. And they can't wait to get to that point so that they can also become a member of your club. So it's way more about building a brand that's bigger to us and to our community than any designer name that we could ever carry. We want our brand to be what is strong about us, and that the designers we work with, then we just partner well with, but we're not reliant on.
That's a really good point, because many of us in the industry feel pressured by manufacturers because of those manufacturer retailer agreements that, you know, specify the number of minimum dresses that you need to order per season. You know, this has become the number one complaint amongst bridal stores regarding manufacturers. And, you know, I think for a lot of stores, they just don't know how to say the word no. And they don't understand that branding isn't about making the manufacturer's brand more popular in your store. It's about you creating your own brand and offering products and services that support the mission of the business. You know, how have you dealt, has that been a challenge for you, or did you not find that as a difficult challenge regarding managing manufacturers and minimums and, you know, staying abreast of what's hot and what's in fashion?
Yeah. I think that's a great question. One, I'm very thankful that we had no money to start, because that limited us from overbuying. If you don't have the money, you can't spend it. So, you know, when people come into the industry, they naturally listen to what all the designers at market are saying. And there's so many of them in one place, right? And what are they all saying? You need our line. Here's our advertising. We reach this many brides. We'll bring brides in. They kind of, and nothing against them. It's part of their pitch to try to convince you that partnering with them is good for your business. So their popularity or how much they spend in marketing tends to be their narrative when they're trying to sell you their dresses. So you go to market and you'll hear that from so many. And a huge mistake that stores make is picking up too many lines. Why? Because they're trying to attract brides. And they believe that if they have all these designers in here, that's what will attract the brides. So it's a, you know, well-meaning, but it's the biggest mistake in the industry that happens is taking on those minimums of that many designers. You cannot turn enough of that product to be able to come up for air and survive. So boutiques struggle to survive. This industry itself, we all know, is not necessarily set up for the success of boutiques. So it's really important that we as boutiques know who we are individually. And I know I don't want to cross over into some of the questions that you've got coming, but no, I'm on this right now. I'm going to just say it. When you are looking at what's difficult about helping other boutiques and coaching other boutiques, I think that the difficulty is boutiques want you to tell them exactly what to do. And that's actually not the best answer for them. The best answer for them is them knowing who they are. And knowing that their story and their journey is what needs to be talked about. It needs to be said. They don't need to copy and paste what someone else is doing. We're not looking for all boutiques to start looking alike and start doing the same stuff. So in coaching other boutiques, the challenge for me anyway, because of my philosophy, is that I want to get in with that person and hear their strengths and help them to explode those. It's the same belief I have for brides. It's the same belief I have for stylists. It's that everyone has unique strengths and individual superpowers. And it's not about us all of a sudden becoming cookie cutter. That's the worst thing we could do in the industry. What we need to do is have, okay, there's a small boutique that's a one dressing room. Let's explode what's strong about that. And then there's a boutique that has 20 dressing rooms. Let's figure out what the stories are and how to help that owner explode what's unique about her. There's historical buildings you're in. There's different hometowns that you're in. There's so many different unique ways to lean into a brand to make it stand out. And everybody needs their individual voice to be strong. So we've got to stop trying to copy and paste. We also need to stop worrying about, is everybody else doing the same thing I am? And stop worrying about, like, you know, frankly, like if everybody would just get on the same page and do X, Y, Z all together. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to be that independent person who's going to do something different. So I think that's the strong way forward. Develop your own brand, your own voice.
And I really agree with you on all of that. And, you know, my store specifically, I had that come to Jesus moment where I was like, okay, I'm trying to be everything to everybody. And I had way too many lines. I had way too many price points. You know, the key is to really target a specific market. You need to identify your market. And my market, I realized, was different than competitors in the area. First of all, price point. And, you know, budgets and the ability to purchase a dress at a particular price. You know, I didn't realize until I had that moment where I said, you know what, I need to really focus on who we are, what we need to provide to our customers on a service level that is complementary of our mission. And Every store is different. And one of the things that I let brides know is not every store is going to align with your goals and your needs. So, you know, it's important to understand that not everyone's going to offer the same thing. So if it's important to you to have champagne and goodies and to be able to sit for 3 hours, that's not my store. It's a little different, right? Where we provide the excellent service to the customer, but there's certain things that legally we're not allowed to serve alcohol, or, you know, there's different things that at each store that makes them special and unique. So what you say, I can appreciate, because, and for me, I was lucky that it all came to me without having to, you know, suffer loss of sales or suffer, you know, business-wise, where we did have the traffic and we did have, you know, the branding in town, where, you know, being in business for 30 years now, you know, pretty much our customers are legacy customers. The families are generational. So it's funny when a customer comes in and they're like, well, you know, you styled my prom dress, you know, 10 years ago. And I'm like, that's now awesome. You're really aging me. You know,
you're like, I didn't know. Yeah, that's right. It just doesn't feel like that. It doesn't feel like we changed, right? And then all of a sudden we're looking at that type of situation, and it's very surreal, very surreal.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that being in business for so long, you and I, you know, customers will look at us as if it was easy and they'll look at us as if, you know, this job is easy, or it's a hobby. I think I still have family members that still think after 30 years that that what I do is a hobby. And that's okay. But what was the hardest thing for you in growing these businesses?
I think that there was going into the second year, once we opened, like it was all systems go. Like we had to, and I was the only salesperson. I had an assistant, and then about 6 months in, she started taking brides as well. So I was taking every bride. There was a scary, we opened in June and we sold 13 dresses in June. We didn't know if that was great, but our goal on our business plan was to sell 12 dresses a month. And so we sold 13. So we were like, oh, look at that. Yay. And then in July, we sold 4, and that was a moment where we were like, oh, okay, this is what slow season feels like. And so mental note, you know, we're going to do something different next July. But as we headed in, you know, as we brought dresses started coming in, there was a seamstress that we had referred people to, but we let her use our space. So we weren't financially connected, but we would let her use our space. And I'll tell you, there was a time when I was a bride called me and said, hey, can you be at this next appointment? And I said, sure. So I came to the next appointment, and the seamstress was there first, and the seamstress was very stressed. And she said, it's not done. And I was like, okay, the bride's not here yet. Show me what's going on. And she unzipped the bag, and oh my goodness, Maria, like it... She had butchered this dress.
Oh dear.
Butchered it. And I just froze. And I was like, okay. When is the wedding? And she said, it's next weekend. This was a Thursday. So it's next weekend. I was like, okay. I said, I need you to go, because she started being hysterical. I said, I need you to leave, and I need you to bring me every dress you're working on. And she was working on 22 dresses. So I said, bring me every dress you're working on. And then I called the bride. I said, Sarah, how far away are you? And she said, I'm almost there. And I was like, okay. And I get Gabe and I on the phone, and we start trying to find another seamstress. And Gabe just keeps calling, trying to find a seamstress. Sarah arrives with her sister, and she comes to me, and I give her a hug, and she says, it's not done, is it? And I said, no, it's not. And you're not going to like what I have to tell you. And she said, okay. I had already called the designer. There was not a dress in this size, in this white color, because it was white. And so we couldn't get a new dress. It was where we were sitting. So Gabe's still on the phone. He ends up finding a seamstress while I'm talking with Sarah. But I sat Sarah down and I said, talk to me about your process. And she started sharing how the seamstress would promise, and then it wasn't done, and promise, and then her portraits, she was supposed to be able to take her portraits, and then it wasn't done for that, and just all these different things she'd been lied to this whole time. I was dying inside. And I said to her, I said, okay, so talk to me about what this next week looks like. So, you know, we're going to have a seamstress come and we're going to work on this, but tell me what this next week looks like for you, job wise and all the type of stuff. And she looked at me and she goes, my wedding is Saturday. And this was Thursday. Mm. I didn't even have a week. Mm. I had a day. And I've never felt like I was going to throw up like I did in that moment. And I just kept saying, okay, okay, okay. So, cause I told her, I said, the dress is cut up the front. It's all uneven. It's just, and I gave her a whole description of what the dress was before I showed it to her. So then, I said, let's go. I'm going to show you the dress. We're going to get you in the dress. And then the seamstress walked in. Thankfully, she was not a drama queen seamstress. She immediately got to work. But we had that night to work on this dress. Mm-hmm. And I just apologized to her for the lies that were told her and that was so wrong. And that, you know, we're going to, and she was the way I was able to handle it, she was able to stay calm, surprisingly. So the seamstress had to leave for New York the next day. So she worked through the night. She brought the dress to me at noon the next day and I unzipped it, put it on a mannequin and she left to go to New York. Now I'm stuck with the dress, no other seamstress yet. And so I looked at it, but I felt like I could get it a little bit better. So I called Sarah and she was getting married 3 hours away. Mm. So I called Sarah and I said, Sarah, I've got the dress, but I think I can get it better. So I took it to a tailor that in town and showed it to him, told him what I wanted done to tweak it a little bit more. And now I've got a steamer in the car, Gabe's with me in the car. And I just know that in this first year, our business is going to be taken down because I now have 22 dresses that I've got to also fix and make sure they're good. And we're going to pay for every single one of them. And I told the seamstress after she dropped off the dresses, I said, I will talk to you when this is over. And so we entered a season of our first year, going into the second year, where I was going to 22 extra fittings with different seamstresses, and we were paying for every alteration to be fixed. So any money that would come in would both go towards the next bride's, you know, purchasing the next bride's dress, and anything that was made was going straight into fixing these 22 dresses. But I knew that if I didn't do right by all these brides, that would be it. I know we're going to do right by them. And I just had to trust God that he was going to take care of us. My husband and I were not paying ourselves during this time. We were putting everything into fixing these gowns. So I remember we got the dress back from the tailor and we got in the car and we were driving to the venue because she's having her rehearsal. And it's now like 10 o'clock at night. By the time we get there with the dress, I come in with a mannequin with the dress on and a steamer. And I walk into the suite where she and her dad are practicing their father-daughter dance. And I'm steaming the dress right there and then fixing the hook and eye again and put her in it. And she was so happy and she loved it. And she was so thankful. And I remember leaving that night at midnight from her venue. And I just looked at Gabe in shock. I couldn't believe it went the way it did. I couldn't believe that we had made it through that and that it wasn't going to tank our business. And it was just, and she shared her pictures. And you know what she said to me before I left? She was like, she goes, you're so amazing. I'm going to tell everyone I know about how amazing your shop is. And I thought, this should have gone very differently. Like this, your wedding was about to be ruined and you could have been very different than that. So, but walking that through, after we finished doing that, then I sat down with the seamstress and I said, this is what we've just done. And this is why this was wrong and all of that. And she took responsibility for it. And we worked out a system where she could pay it over time. We worked it out for how she could handle paying for that over time. And we're still, you know, friends to this day. She did right by what happened. But that time, I will tell you, was a very difficult time because we could have lost everything. We should have, honestly, like it should have tanked us, but we walked every single bride to the aisle with her dress and paid for it to get there. So
we all know alterations can absolutely be a very difficult process depending on, you know, how the fit was and what work had to be done. That's why I think we're seeing so many stores now not offering alterations. They're kind of shying away from what's hard. And I think what really separates you from everyone else is you don't walk away from what's hard. Mm. You run towards the fear and you run right through it. And that is something that is so admirable. Mm. And, you know, I do think the industry, as it's changed, Mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing people trying, the owners trying to kind of like, well, you know, we're struggling to sell bridesmaids dresses, so we're just going to get rid of them. Well, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it's like, well, what do you have left to sell? Mm-hmm. Are you just going to sell bridal gowns? So I think it does mm-hmm. separate, you know, the committed, passionate entrepreneurs from those who are maybe not as dedicated to the business as mm-hmm. they realize they needed to be.
Mm. Yeah, I think I think you're right that it does take a ton of dedication that people don't even realize coming in. And I have to say, it's true that different sales online, let's take like bridesmaids dresses, as that continues to increase over the last 20 years, it becomes a thing where it's like, how is it possible to continue with this margin wise or whatnot? It becomes a decision about that. But I think that the principle that I think is important for people in general, any entrepreneur, is whatever decision you make, make it not out of fear, make it because it's a strong decision to make. So if you choose to move something out of your business, or if you choose to add something to your business, don't do either one of those out of fear. You know, when you take on too many designers, it's because of fear of, can I get enough brides? But if you, so choose wisely which designers to take on, know how those numbers will be on you, and make a decision in strength, not in fear. If you need to get rid of a designer because they're not supporting the dresses that they promised they would, they're not getting them on time, or their dresses come in with problems and then the designer doesn't back up the product at all, make a decision to say, hey, I'm going to communicate to you, this is what's going on. If this can't be fixed, I get it, but we're going to have to move on to another designer. That's a move of strength, not of fear. It's communicating up front and then going towards the problem to try to solve it, but then going, okay, this can't work for our bride. We are the face to the brides. And so if the designer isn't supporting us as we're supporting the brides, it's a recipe for disaster. So I agree with you. Fear can be, it lies to us. Fear lies to us. So we have to listen to the courageous choice. Do what's courageous. And whatever you choose to do with your boutique, don't worry about what anybody else is doing. Do what's good for your boutique. If you love bridesmaids, if you love mom's dresses, if you love tuxedos, if you love prom, whatever it is that you love to do, do it strongly. But if something is holding you back and you could do, and you want to specialize in something and make that a strength for yours, great, do it with strength. But just don't make decisions in weakness and in fear. I think that's what I would say to that whole concept.
With all of your knowledge and all of your expertise in this, it's no wonder that you're now doing consulting within the industry. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to hear a little bit more about Do You Speak Bride, which is your consulting company. Share with us a little bit about how you're helping bridal stores and how mm-hmm. this came about, when it came about, and where you see yourself going.
Yeah. So Do You Speak Bride started just a couple of years, actually, after we had we opened Ava Loren in Virginia. And it started because we were doing things in such a different way, with such a different belief set. Like our princess treatment that we started off with, it's a different level kind of experience. And a lot of people had questions of, why would you do that just for one sale? There was everything that we were doing that ended up being the question. Why would you do a party when you're not selling anything at the party? Why would you do this many fashion shows? Because our first year we ended up doing 22 fashion shows, and half of those had parties attached to them. So it was a constant go, go, go. It was a slog, but they didn't understand why we would do this, because it wasn't connected to selling in their minds. And so when we started talking about our princess treatment and the belief that we had of that, what we are in the industry with people, brides, who are in the land of what love is. That's the language they understand. That's the culture they're living in. And if we try to approach someone who is living in this land of love, if we try to approach them transactionally, it's extremely offensive. And the disconnect between how businesses try to run and how brides actually function was so contrasting to me that as I thought about it, it made sense that it's because brides are from a different country. And when they get a ring on their finger, they literally become a native of that country. They speak the same language. They have the same culture. They have the same desires. They have the same tendencies and behaviors. It's like they just become a native. And it doesn't matter if they were a lawyer before. It doesn't matter if they were a college student. When they get the ring on their finger, it doesn't matter if they're a stylist before. When they become a bride, they're suddenly a bride. And all of those same thoughts and things start happening. So when you see it not as brides are crazy, when you see it as they're just a different culture and language, and our businesses are set up in their country. So it's our job to learn them. It's our job to learn their language, not expecting them to learn us. And when that becomes the focus, you grow so much more creative power. You grow so much more ability to empower the bride because you get her on deeper levels than she even gets herself. She's a little bit lost with how she's changed so much and how she functions. So we can understand her really well. So what happened was after being open a couple of years, just a couple of years, actually, literally, I think after the second and a half year, one of the reps from the designer that I carry said, "Are you writing down what you're doing?" And I was like, "No, I'm just going." Like, I was like, "Bill, we gotta make this thing successful. We don't have a fallback plan. Like, this is what we got." And he said, "Well, can I send you some shops to talk to over the phone? I'd love for you to encourage them." And I think part of it too is I'm an incurable optimist. And I very much believe that most conflict in life can be either headed off at the front end, or it can be talked through with strength. And my husband really taught me that too, as we were dating, that love is proven in conflict. So if ever there was a thing we didn't agree on, the way he interacted with me taught me so much about the security of love and how to communicate with love. So applying all of these things to brides was what I started doing in helping shops just over the phone. I started consulting over the phone for free. I was just doing it as we drive places. I would do it whenever they needed help. And I didn't think I had all the answers. I just was willing to help if somebody needed encouragement. That's where I came from to start off with. And so then they would ask certain questions and I would just encourage further. And I would say, "Hey, I don't know if this helps, but this is how I see this." Because I'm coming again, I started my business from a stylist point of view, not from a business owner's point of view. I knew what I needed as a stylist. I knew what those decisions were. So helping shops do that is really important. So anyway, started consulting that way. Word started spreading about what we did with the Princess treatment because it's not just an after hours appointment. It's over the top. And so opportunities began to open for me to share at Market. I was on a panel at Market. And when I realized, oh, okay, I want to communicate what love is and how love operates in this particular setting, when you're trying to sell something, how does love operate in that? How do you do that relationally, not transactionally? So as I would share, more platforms would open. So then I thought, well, there needs to be further training for people in this. And so I shot a video series we shot that in like 2 days. Cause I just would like, okay, 3, 2, 1, go. And I would just train. And then the next one, here we go, 3, 2, 1, go. And we knocked it out so that I could help people. Once I got to Market, I could say, "Hey, here's this to help train your people." So that was the first step of Do You Speak Bride coming into being. And that just kept multiplying, where then because I could communicate it well from the stage, more opportunities opened. And it was interesting, Maria, because it was like in the bridal industry, people had become very quickly jaded with brides. So they were frustrated at brides and almost bitter at brides. And brides seemed like the problem in many conversations that I would hear. So coming in and saying, "Hey, let's love and serve the bride. Let's understand them. Let's get their fears and let's see what they actually are valuing. And let's meet them there instead of resist that. Let's stop with the rules. Let's stop with the limitations on brides. And let's find ways to empower them in their strength. Let's stop trying to incentivize them with fear, and let's incentivize them with the best thing that could ever happen in their life. That's a different kind of strength." So as I would communicate that and train and then figure out more and more and more, the reason I came to these solutions of how to speak bride is that I was working with so many brides. I was the one going from one straight to the next, to the next, to the next. And so I was able to work out things that I would mess up. I'd be like, oh, I didn't like how that went. Oh, that didn't actually help the bride. Oh, that was an awkward interaction. And then when I would figure out how to do it, I'd hit save on it. And so then I could help my other assistant do the same. So then I started, you know, just hitting save on all those techniques of how to get over these obstacles and awkward moments and mother-daughter conflict. And, you know, when the crowd is too opinionated, there's too many people, too many voices shooting at the bride, or the bride comes and her budget's so low and her taste is so high. All the different angsty moments, to see those as a starting place to help the bride overcome that and get ahead of it. This is my first visit and I can't buy on my first visit somewhere, or I have so many other shops to go to, or I need to sleep on it. And all those pain points that everyone experiences all over the world with brides, I was working to come up with solutions to those because I believe there are solutions. So as I would solve them, then I would want to help other people with those solutions. So that's where Do You Speak Bride came from. And it's just continued to morph from there. But it's looking at what is the difference between love and manipulation and between leading and controlling.
You're a true entrepreneur. The true entrepreneur identifies problems and comes up with products, services, and solutions to solve those problems. And that's exactly what you're doing. And you're using the wedding dress as the vehicle to get there.
Yes. 100%. 100%. I really see that businesses, that we have businesses for one purpose, and that's to build people. And I think that's something to keep in mind as an entrepreneur. If you have a mission of building people, your business will teach you how to do that. But if you think that people are there to build your business instead of the business there to build the people, then you get really off in what you're doing. And you start using people, controlling people, frankly, abusing people, not appreciating people. And there is no business outside of people. It's people themselves are the most important work we could do. So I wanted to have a training. The only training I'd be interested in doing, if I could be honest with you, and creating. I'm not interested in a 10-step selling process. I'm not interested in, here's the zinger line to say to close a sale. I don't have an interest in that. I have a whole bunch of passion behind, here is how you can communicate well so that the other person can see possibilities, options, clarity. They are safe to express themselves. They know how to connect with their relatives that maybe they struggled to before. They know that they love each other and that we're fanning that flame. Everyone is heard. Everyone is valued. And then you are not a doormat, nor are you a car salesman. You're an empowering presence in this appointment. And how to encourage my stylists to have courage, how to have stylists know that they can have courage because they've got the tools to know what to say. They don't have to stay quiet in the background, being afraid of being perceived as salesy, and they don't have to stay quiet in the background and be a doormat. I want them to step forward because they know how to say and how to love someone and how to see the best in people. So I'll train on that 24/7. Give me people and let's talk about what love and leadership looks like. And let's talk about solutions instead of sitting in problems. Let's talk about good communication. Let's talk about learning how to preface something so that you can say something and keep everyone else in the room feeling safe and not ever bat down. All those things. Let's do that. So to me, that's what I love about being able to share these truths. And on our training platform, we have a training platform. In fact, we're gamifying this training platform right now. I'm chomping at the bit to get that out. Like it takes time to completely vet that, to have the gamification be clear. And I reshot some of the videos that I had done, even during COVID, I had done some videos there just keeping, communication with all the boutiques, and I wanted to reshoot them a little bit better. So I was just doing that, but soon that gamification will be live for everyone. And the reason that's important is we want to incentivize stylists to love jumping on that platform and learning it, trying the skills, sending us video, earning their next levels that they can go through in the training. And I know that if they learn these things, it helps them in their actual life. They learn more about love. They learn more about themselves. They learn how to communicate stronger. And we as women, if we can help other women communicate in stronger ways, it's going to be a better world. It's going to be stronger. It's going to be more beautiful. It's going to have love at its core. people are going to feel more sure of who they are instead of having to become something that they don't believe in. And what we practice in our store, we can practice outside of the store. And that's, to me, that's valuable to do. So that's why we do what we do.
Well, I can't wait to see that platform. And I will conclude by saying it's wonderful to see that someone understands that life is about special moments.
That's
and
right.
Business is about people.
That's right.
And that's the basis of it all. And I think many entrepreneurs miss that very basic point that people just want to feel valued, respected, and included.
That's right.
In any business, I think those general principles can easily apply. Wendy, thank you 100%. So much for being a part of Because Marie Said So. I am so thrilled that you were able to come on today, and I'm looking forward to building an even greater relationship with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a joy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Take care.